This piece continues a thread from my earlier essay, What is Truth? The Many Faces of Reality in Everyday Life. There I explored different philosophies of truth. Here I turn to how our own minds and languages live truth, in blurred lines, shifting thresholds, and relative perceptions. How many trees make a forest? It sounds like a riddle, but it is really a mirror. Add one tree to another, and eventually you will say, this is a forest. Remove them one by one, and eventually you will say, this is no longer a forest. But where exactly does the shift occur? Logic falters, language hesitates, yet perception moves without pause. Stand before a cluster of trees, and most people will answer quickly, yes, this is a forest. No, this is not. The precision of the answer matters less than the fact that an answer is possible at all. This paradox, logical indeterminacy, perceptual immediacy, is the doorway into something larger. The way our minds, our languages, and our societies live with blurred lines. The brain's relativity. Our senses are comparative engines. We do not measure absolutes, we register contrasts. A room feels cold only because your skin expected warmth. Water feels wet only because it disrupts your baseline of dryness. A whisper feels loud in a silent room. A shout can vanish in a stadium. Psychophysics calls this the Weber-Fechner law. Perception scales with proportion, not raw values. Our nervous system notices differences that matter, not the world in its entirety. Wittgenstein once said, "The limits of my language are the limits of my world." But before language, there is perception, and perception itself is a limit. We never encounter reality directly, but through the filters of contrast and adaptation. What feels solid shifts when the context shifts. This relativity is not weakness, it is efficiency. It lets us navigate a fluid, uncertain world without calculating every variable. We survive not by knowing exact degrees of temperature or precise lumens of light, but by knowing what feels colder, brighter, heavier, safer. We live, in other words, by gradients. Language and thresholds. Yet language has no patience for gradients. It wants categories. We say forest as if it were fixed. We draw lines between poor and wealthy, healthy and sick, child and adult. The world is continuous, but our words cut it into pieces. Derrida would remind us, every word carries a trace of other meanings. A forest is never simply itself. It is defined in relation to grove, jungle, wilderness. Meaning arises not from essence, but from difference. This is why definitions matter so much in law and policy. Call something a forest and it gains protection. Call it land and it may be cleared. Draw a poverty line at one number and lives shift with it, some supported, others excluded. Language is not neutral. It is an architecture that frames perception, sometimes clarifies, sometimes distorts. Words are not mirrors, they are maps. And maps, as we know, are partial. From perception to politics. The relativity of perception flows straight into the realm of ethics and power. Fairness is judged comparatively, who received more, who less. Justice is weighed against precedent. Is this punishment harsher than others? Wealth is always contextual. What feels rich in one culture feels meager in another. Foucault called this a regime of truth, a system by which societies decide what counts as valid, what counts as real. Truth is not just discovered, it is produced. The threshold of forest, the line of poverty, the category of crime, these are not neutral descriptions. They are instruments of governance. This is why propaganda is always a war over words. Call it collateral damage instead of civilian death. Call it enhanced interrogation instead of torture. The thresholds shift, and with them moral perception. Institutions demand hard lines, but life resists them. We live in shades while systems legislate in absolutes. The tension never disappears, truth as relational process. So what becomes of truth in such a world? If perception is relative and language blurred, does truth dissolve into mere opinion? Kierkegaard warned that despair often arises not from suffering, but from living out of alignment with one's own truth. That warning only makes sense if truth still matters, even when it resists final definition. The answer may lie in integration. Objective truth grounds us in what happened, the count of trees, the boiling point of water, the orbits of planets. Subjective truth roots us in what it meant, the sense of forest, the experience of grief, the memory of love. Relational truth arises when we hold them together, fact and feeling, measure and meaning, number and narrative. Buber's vision of the I-Thou relationship points here. Truth is not just correspondence or coherence, it is encounter. It lives not in statements alone, but in presence. When one being meets another, without objectifying, without reducing, the forest is both measurable and mysterious. Its truth is not just in the hectares, but in the hush beneath its canopy. To deny the measurable is delusion. To deny the felt is dehumanization. Truth, then, is not possession, but relationship. Not a wall, but a horizon. A closing invitation. The blurred lines are not flaws. They are the conditions of perception. The texture of reality, the soil from which meaning grows. To live truthfully is not to demand clarity at all costs. It is to move with humility within ambiguity. To see thresholds as provisional, not sacred. To treat categories as scaffolds, not prisons. How many trees make a forest? The scientist may answer with data, the legislator with a definition, the philosopher with a paradox. But perhaps the truest answer is this: a forest becomes a forest when we learn to see it as one. And truth becomes truth when we learn to live it together, across differences, across thresholds, across the blurred lines that bind us more than they divide us.